I myself have never been able to find out precisely what feminism is. I only know that people call me a feminist whenever I express sentiments that differentiate me from a doormat or a prostitute.
I'm Katie Ailes, and you're listening to Building Stories, a new podcast from Edinburgh City of Literature and Historic Environment Scotland. This series celebrates five female writers who lived at various points in their lives in Edinburgh and vitally contributed to literary culture across Scotland, the UK, and the world. The important work of these women has gone under-recognized, so in this podcast, we shine a light on their achievements. All of the authors featured in these podcasts were nominated to be recognized by Historic Environment Scotland's commemorative plaque scheme. Plaques for Rebecca West, Mary Brunton, and Christian Isabel Johnston were installed in spring 2022. President Harry Truman called her the world's best reporter. Time magazine called her indisputably the world's number one woman writer. Virginia Woolf called her hard as nails. In this episode of Building Stories, we celebrate a titan of 20th century writing, Dame Rebecca West. The writer the world knew as Rebecca West was born Cicely Isabel Fairfield in London in 1892, the youngest of three sisters and known to her family as Cissy. Her father was a well-respected journalist, but unfaithful to his wife and terrible with money, so the family had to move multiple times during Cissy's childhood. When she was nine, her father abandoned the family to chase a potential job opportunity in Sierra Leone. They never reunited. Cissy's mother was Scottish, originally from Edinburgh, so when her husband abandoned her, she moved with her daughters back to the place she knew best and where rent was cheaper. The four of them crowded in with Cissy's grandmother and great aunt before eventually finding lodgings at 2 Hope Park Square. Today, this is a lovely, quiet spot on the Edinburgh University campus, but in the early 1900s, it was a dank, filthy slum, and Cissy hated it. 20 years later, writing her second novel, The Judge, the author drew upon her experience living in Hope Park Square to create the loosely fictional Hume Park Square, where her protagonist, Ellen Melville, lived.
It was a little box-like square, hardly 40 paces across, on three sides of which small squat houses sat closely with quarrelling air, as if each had to broaden its shoulders and press out its elbows for fear of being squeezed out by its neighbours and knocked backwards into the mews. They sent out in front of them the slimmest slices of garden, which left room for nothing but a paved walk from the entry and a fenced bed in the middle, where a lamppost stood amongst some leggy laurels, which the rain was shaking as a terrier shakes a rat.
In Edinburgh, Cissy attended a girls' school on a full scholarship. When at age 15 she caught tuberculosis, she was forced to leave, and that was the end of her formal education. But like so many other great minds, stopping school didn't mean stopping her intellectual growth. It was in her mid-teens that the feverish passion for great ideas, political, social, and cultural, first ignited in Cissy Fairfield's mind, and this deep curiosity would last her entire life. The Edinburgh of the early 1900s was bustling with radical ideas, including the scandalous notion that women deserve the right to vote. At age 15, Cissy idolized the brave suffragists. She eagerly joined the Votes for Women Club in Edinburgh, sold their journal on Prince's Street, and marched in their rallies. 1907 was the first time her words would appear in print. She penned a fiery letter to the Scotsman, which emphatically described the ordeals of working-class women, particularly lead workers, and the need for reform.
The profound national effects of the subjection of women on the nation are a question affecting the empire itself. While women have to endure such squalid physical agony to gain their daily bread, while children are born sightless and distorted, already tainted by lead poisoning, it is not only the duty of every woman but every patriot to press this question before all others and immediately. It is obviously incumbent on everyone whose eyes are open not only to the sufferings of women, but the well-beings of the nation to accept the call to action of the National Women's Social and Political Union and to thank the noble women who are giving not only their time and labour, but not a little of their own private interests to this great cause.
At age 17, brimming with activist and creative energy, Cissy travelled down to London to audition for the Academy of Dramatic Art, now RADA. She was accepted to train as an actress, and as her sisters both also found jobs in London, the entire family moved back down south together. Although Cissy's foray into acting fizzled out after 3 terms at the Academy, the move to London was the catalyst she needed to launch full scale into her passion for activism, arts, and culture. At age 19, Cissy began writing for the feminist paper The Free Woman, and it was for a byline that she assumed the pseudonym that she would use for the rest of her life. Rebecca West was the name of a rather melodramatic character in Henrik Ibsen's play Rosmersholm. Although the author later regretted the Ibsen association and claimed that she picked the name hurriedly as the paper went off to print, with this decision, the excited young woman Cicely Fairfield was permanently transformed into the professional writer Rebecca West. Over the next several years, Rebecca also wrote for the Daily News and the socialist newspaper The Clarion, and she took on an editorial role at The Free Woman. It was Rebecca West who asked the famous modernist poet Ezra Pound to join her on the Free Woman's editorial team, which sparked the rebirth of the magazine as The Egoist, which, several years later, was gutsy enough to publish James Joyce's shockingly controversial novel, Ulysses. Trace the butterfly effect back far enough in the UK literature scene, and Rebecca West was instrumental in many such stories. One of the most scandalous literary love affairs of the 1900s began when Rebecca West published a book review. Her writing style was eloquent but blunt, and she did not hold back in expressing her opinions. H.G. Wells was a well-established author in London, a fixture in the literary scene famous for his classic novel The War of the Worlds, published over 20 years prior. In 1911, a review crossed his desk which described him as, quote, the old maid among novelists, and accused him of having a, quote, mind too long absorbed in airships. Bemused, Wells invited this bold reviewer, a young woman named Rebecca, to lunch. What began as a sharp-tongued intellectual exchange soon evolved into more, and by that autumn, H.G. Wells and Rebecca West were lovers. She was 21, he was 46, and married. Several months into the affair, Rebecca fell pregnant, an unenviable situation for an unmarried woman, worse, a mistress, in Edwardian-era England. Either doing the responsible thing, or hiding his shame, depending on how you look at it, H.G. Wells sent Rebecca up north and paid for her to wait out her pregnancy in confinement in Norfolk. They named their son Anthony Panther West Fairfield. Panther was H.G.'s nickname for Rebecca. She called him Jaguar. Notably, baby Anthony was given both of his mother's surnames, legal and pseudonym, but not his father's. Now united by their son, Rebecca West and H.G. Wells spun out their affair for the next decade, but it was often fractious and bitter. As a single mother, she wanted the security of marriage, but he refused to leave his wife for her. Finally, in 1923, Rebecca ended things. 7 years later, she would marry banker Henry Maxwell Andrews in a ceremony which, shocked newspaper headlines observed, did not include the word obey. Their comparatively calm marriage lasted nearly 40 years until Henry's death in 1968. But back now to Rebecca West's greatest passion, her writing. She is best known for her prolific and daring journalism career, which included writing for most major Western periodicals of the day, including The New Statesman, The New York Herald Tribune, The Daily Telegraph, Harper's Bazaar, and Vanity Fair. The deep intellectual and political curiosity ignited in her teenage years fanned into a flame during her journalism career. Rebecca West was hungry for great ideas and enthusiastically followed stories, even when they took her into the mouth of danger. In the years leading up to World War II, she made 3 trips to the war-torn state of Yugoslavia. Her lengthy book regarding the history and politics of this area, Black Lamb and Gray Falcon, is widely regarded as a masterpiece still powerful and relevant today. Like much of her writing, it contains not only astute analysis of the facts, but also philosophical musings on the human condition. In Black Lamb and many other later works of journalism and criticism, Rebecca West considered the role of art in shaping our lives.
Art is not a plaything, but a necessity, and its essence, form, is not a decorative adjustment, but a cup into which life can be poured and lifted to the lips and be tasted. If one's own existence has no form, if its events do not come handily to mind and disclose their significance, we feel about ourselves as if we were reading a bad book.
In the aftermath of World War II, The New Yorker sent Rebecca West to cover the Nuremberg trials. Her keenly observed articles on the trials were closely followed and lauded by one critic as, quote, reporting raised to the level of literature. This assignment led to West's fascination with the ethics of political loyalty, especially in fraught wartime environments. In 1947, she published her morally inquisitive book, The Meaning of Treason, reflecting on the controversial trial of the British citizen and pro-Nazi propagandist nicknamed Lord Haw Haw. Decades later, in the Cold War era, West revised the text to reflect the evolving political context and re-released it as The New Meaning of Treason. Rebecca West continued this tireless investigative journalism into her later years. When she was in her 70s, she traveled to South Africa on assignment for the Sunday Times to report on apartheid, and into her 80s, she was developing a thorough study of Mexican history and culture, published posthumously as Survivors in Mexico. Rebecca West's global journalism career earned her many prestigious plaudits. In 1948, US President Truman gave her the Women's Press Club Award for Journalism, and in 1959, she was the first ever female journalist to be awarded a damehood. Although she is most recognized today for her journalism career, Rebecca West also wrote many acclaimed works of fiction. At the age of 26, she released her first novel, Return of the Soldier. Published in 1918, it was the first novel about World War I written by a woman. It tells the story of a shell-shocked soldier's return home from the trenches, providing an early account of what we now recognize to be PTSD. Although the novel focuses on the male soldier's experience, it is told from the perspective of a woman, the soldier's cousin Jenny, and commentates on the effects of war not only on soldiers, but also on their families and communities. Rebecca West's other fictional work includes her 1922 novel The Judge, which the famed Scottish poet Hugh McDermid called the best Scottish novel of recent years, and her highly acclaimed quasi-autobiographical novel The Fountain Overflows of 1957. Rebecca West also continued to review books throughout her life, writing for such major publications as The Times, The New York Herald Tribune, The Sunday Telegraph, The New Republic, and The Bookman. Just like her review of H.G. Wells that had sparked their fiery affair, many of her depictions of fellow authors were, well, let's call them direct. Henrik Ibsen, whose writing had given Rebecca her pen name, received this treatment.
Ibsen cried out for ideas for the same reason that men called out for water, because he had not got any.
George Bernard Shaw,
silly old buffoon.
In this company, her appraisal of James Joyce's Ulysses seems almost generous.
Though it is ugly and incompetent, it is a work of art. That is to say, it is necessary.
As you might imagine, Rebecca West's blunt honesty didn't always endear her to the rest of the UK literary community. In 1928, Virginia Woolf wrote this rather colourful depiction of West.
Hard as nails, very distrustful and no beauty, but as tenacious as a terrier, with flashing eyes, very shabby, rather dirty nails, immense vitality, bad taste, suspicion of intellectuals, and great intelligence.
As sharp as Rebecca West could be, she also exhibited deep compassion for those in need. During World War II, she opened her manor home in southern England to Yugoslav refugees fleeing the war. Throughout her life, she used her voice to protest injustice, and her actions backed up her words. In 1983, Dame Rebecca West died in her sleep in her London home. Her extraordinary life had spanned 9 decades, from the year the diesel engine was invented to the year Star Wars: Return of the Jedi was released in cinemas. Tributes to her life and work poured in from across the globe. William Shawn, editor-in-chief of The New Yorker, offered this praise.
Rebecca West was one of the giants and will have a lasting place in English literature. No one in this century wrote more dazzling prose, or had more wit, or looked at the intricacies of human character and the ways of the world more intelligently.
Despite her enormous impact on journalism, fiction, and criticism, until now there have been no commemorative plaques raised in the UK to honour Rebecca West. By contrast, H.G. Wells has at least 11. In spring 2022, following a nomination from the University of Edinburgh, Historic Environment Scotland took a step to redress this imbalance by installing a plaque to West at 2 Hope Park Square, where 10-year-old Cicely Fairfield lived for a year, and which later inspired her portrayals of Edinburgh in her novels. This plaque serves as a testament to this extraordinary woman, whose sharp wit, curious intellect and strong will shaped the cultural and political landscape of the UK and the world. That's all for this episode of Building Stories. For more episodes and to learn more about the ongoing effort to make historically significant women more visible in Edinburgh, please visit www.cityofliterature.com. This podcast is produced by I Am Loud Productions. It was commissioned by Edinburgh City of Literature and Historic Environment Scotland. Thank you so much for listening.